we have been experiencing a boom of younger bears, sub-adults, or like newly emancipated independent bears.
Could strong Bristol Bay salmon returns be causing an increase in bear activity? From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, August 15th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, U.S. House hopeful Elise Galvin is an independent running in the Democratic primary as an everywoman.
This is the time for someone who is like all people to be representing people. I'm in touch.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Do you want to work at a job that contributes to the health of your community? Well, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, is hiring. SEARCH offers full-time jobs that include health, vision, and dental benefits, as well as paid time off and retirement savings. For more information, visit search.org/jobs and view open positions. Start a rewarding career helping others at SEARCH. Healthy is here. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium.
Across Alaska, crime is up. That's according to data released today by the Department of Public Safety comparing 2017 to 2016. In its Uniform Crime Report, the department says that statewide, crime rose by 6% last year. It's part of a longer-term increase in Alaska crime. The rate of violent crimes like murder, rape, robbery, and assault increased by more than a third from 2013 to 2017. Property crime rates grew too, by almost a quarter in the same period. During a press conference today, Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan took questions from reporters. Asked if the report identified any particular areas where violent crime was increasing most dramatically, Monaghan pointed to Alaska's most densely populated communities.
We've actually seen a lot more activity in the urban areas in regards to some of the violence that kind of related to gangs.
That lines up with the Department of Law's data, too. According to that department, felony prosecutions last year went up mainly in urban hubs and western Alaska. Commissioner Monaghan says Alaska's designation as a high-intensity drug trafficking area by federal officials means it will soon receive funds to help combat the ongoing opioid crisis.
Understanding that a lot of the violent crime is being driven by the drug epidemic itself. So with the high-intensity drug trafficking money that we're going to be receiving shortly, that is going to be a concerted effort to try to address the gangs, address the drugs, and we should see, a reduction in the violent crime.
32 police agencies from around Alaska submitted data for 2017. The Uniform Crime Reporting data is submitted to the FBI as part of a nationwide effort to collect national crime statistics. You can find a link to the full report on our website, alaskapublic.org. Moose hunting season begins in just over 2 weeks, and hunters are up in arms over restrictions on access through military training ranges that will make it hard for them to get back into their favorite camps. Fort Wainwright officials say they've tried to accommodate hunters' concerns, but they say the restrictions are needed because the ranges around Fort Greely will be busy for the next few weeks with Air Force Red Flag training exercises. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Michael Bryan says he won't be going moose hunting this year because he can't get back into his camp near the base of Mount Hayes due to restrictions that'll keep him from flying through airspace over ranges around Fort Greely.
It's an area where hunters have traditionally gone for decades, and myself and my hunting partner, we've been going to our camp for 25 years.
Bryan says he's especially disappointed because Wainwright officials announced the restrictions and training schedule on July 30th, too late for him to rejigger his schedule.
And at the 11th hour, the military published a training schedule and a map that eliminated or greatly reduce the hunting opportunities in a big portion of the eastern Tanana Flats.
Fort Wainwright spokesman Brady Gross says post officials have gotten some complaints about the restrictions over the past couple of weeks, but he says they've tried to accommodate hunters by coordinating with Air Force officials to stagger the red flag training schedule and open up opportunities for hunters to access some of the ranges or their airspace en route to their camps.
We did coordinate with the Air Force to keep as many areas open as possible.
Bryan agrees the Army and Air Force have tried to reach out to hunters, but he says they didn't reach very far.
They have made some marginal efforts to accommodate hunters, but very little.
Gross says Wainwright officials didn't have a lot of wiggle room this year because this round of red flag training will be especially busy. He says that's because the Air Force has adopted a 2-year cycle for the exercises that involves more aircraft and training on even-numbered years. And he says on those years, the ranges will have to be set up for the heavier schedule.
They need to modify the training area to support red flag training with their units.
Brian says he and other hunters have talked about the restrictions with staff of the Alaska Congressional Delegation and members of organizations like Resident Hunters of Alaska, as well as a State Department Fish and Game Advisory Panel.
The Fairbanks Area Advisory Committee for Fish and Game will be meeting in October, and this will be a point of discussion, certainly.
Brian says he hopes those talks will lead to a solution that won't keep him and his fellow hunters from getting back into their favorite hunting spots every other year. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Bristol Bay has seen a lot of salmon return to the region during the summer sockeye runs in the past few years. This hasn't just been good for commercial fishermen, it's also been good for bears. Along the Alaska Peninsula, around the Brooks River near its famous waterfalls in Katmai National Park, more bears are appearing and more cubs are surviving. This made one researcher ask whether there is a direct link between the size of Bristol Bay's salmon runs and the number of bears returning to the river each summer. KDLG's Mitch Borden has the story.
Tourists from all over come to Brooks Falls and Katmai National Park to watch some of the best fishermen in the world face down the hordes of sockeye surging upstream.
In front of us, there's 9 bears, thousands of salmon waiting their turn to try and jump above Brooks Falls.
The bears are quite a sight, and there are so many here because it's the easiest place around for them to get a quick bite.
Brooks River is not the only grocery store in town, but it's definitely the most, probably I'd say, well-supplied.
Leslie Scora is a wildlife biologist for the National Park Service at Brooks Camp studying bears. She says the salmon are so easy to catch at the falls because it's a bottleneck. Thousands of fish get backed up as they try to jump up about 4 feet to continue to their spawning grounds. This makes it easier for bears to catch all the salmon they need and for people to study them. Since 2001, researchers have kept track of how many individual brown bears come to the stream annually to fish. Around 40 bears return on a yearly basis, but recently there's been a spike in those numbers.
But we have been experiencing a boom of younger bears, subadults, or like newly emancipated independent bears.
The number of bears that showed up every summer does fluctuate. In 2013, when Scora first started working near Brooks Falls, it was one of the lowest turnouts ever recorded. She remembers tourists coming up and asking, "Where are all the bears?" This got her thinking. Scora started examining what determines how many bears come to the river every summer. She does this by tallying how many bears appear annually.
And then look at the number of salmon that have been jumping just at Brooks Falls and kind of compare if those numbers have created either a correlation in the number of cubs we see or the survival of cubs or even adult bears or subadult bears.
If there's more salmon, Scora thinks that could mean more bears, while fewer fish would mean less bears. Bristol Bay's large salmon returns over the last few years and the spike in young bears around Brooks River could support this hypothesis, but nothing is certain yet. Scora has been working on the project for over a year. Besides the amount of salmon in the river, she's also interested in seeing if the river's water level affects how many fish bears catch and if the amount of tourists visiting the falls impacts the bears at all. Back at the falls, Scora's enthusiasm for watching bears is shared by a lot of people. Tia Roberts made her way from L.A. and can't get over being so close to the predators while they snap jumping salmon out of the air.
It never gets tiring. It's so thrilling to be able to watch anything out in the wild in their own natural habitat, just watching their behavior. It's so thrilling.
Scora hopes to wrap up her research on Brooks Falls within the next year and move on to the larger part of her study that will look at factors affecting brown bear behavior and survival across Katmai National Park. At Brooks Falls, I'm Mitch Borden.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, children in Bethel might need an alternative to school buses.
It is absolutely routine for kids to take cabs.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaskan News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Two well-funded candidates are running in the Democratic primary to win the opportunity to challenge incumbent Republican Congressman Don Young. They are Elise Galvin and Dimitri Shane, both from Anchorage. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin spoke to each of them and starts off with this profile of Galvin.
Elise Surratt Galvin is running as every woman. That's part of her campaign message.
This is the time for someone who is like all people to be representing people. I'm in touch. I've been there. I've been there recently, more importantly.
Galvin is best known as founder of Great Alaska Schools, a citizens' lobby for better education funding. But she's done plenty of other things, too. Daycare operator, hotel manager, school consultant.
Honestly, my biggest pride in terms of my job in life is raising four kids.
Her youngest goes off to college this fall. Galvin grew up mostly in Alaska. She has family members who homesteaded in the Anchorage Bowl, among other relatives who settled in the state.
They became everything from builders to auto mechanics and butchers and, well, misfits and outlaws, a little bit of everything.
Galvin is running in the Democratic primary, but she's an independent, or technically undeclared. She says her positions line up with the Democratic platform, though she says she's more committed to solutions than she is to any party. If she wins the primary, her name will be on the ballot as the Democratic nominee. And if she loses the primary, she says she will not try other routes to get on the November ballot. Democrat Dimitri Shane has pledged the same. Galvin says healthcare is at a crisis point in Alaska, and she's calling for a multi-pronged approach. First, to stop efforts that would undermine existing coverage, and in the meantime, work toward comprehensive coverage for everyone. Shane wants single-payer Medicare for all. Galvin isn't opposed to that.
I think that's an idea that certainly needs to be put on the table as one of them, as one solution.
Congressman Young is tight with the National Rifle Association. Asked if she supports a ban on specific firearms, Galvin reframed the issue around violence and mental health.
Parents aren't feeling safe. I'm very concerned about how we're feeling. Our children aren't feeling safe walking into school. At the same time, we're a state that very much values having our guns. In fact, for many Alaskans, it brings us the protein that many families need.
She says it's possible to protect Second Amendment rights and still increase safety. To do that, she wants to close loopholes in background check requirements before gun sales.
And I'm also in favor of ensuring that we have the resources we need to follow the laws that are on the books.
If Galvin is part of a so-called blue wave that puts Democrats in control of the House of Representatives, there will likely be a push to reverse the decision that opened the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil development. Galvin hasn't taken a position on that.
That's not something that I'm putting out as one of my platform pieces. I do know that it passed law already. Whether or not it gets rescinded, I don't know about that.
She is leery of offshore drilling in the Arctic. She's not convinced it's safe. She's married to Pat Galvin, a Democrat who was then-Governor Sarah Palin's revenue commissioner. Pat Galvin is now an executive at Great Bear Petroleum, an exploration company active on the North Slope. Galvin has proved she can raise serious money. She's raked in about $600,000, a third of it in small donations, $200 or less. Galvin says she'll have to raise a lot more to beat the incumbent. The congressman has raised about $800,000 so far. Besides Galvin and Dimitri Shane, two other candidates will appear on the Democratic ballot who have raised little or no money. Christopher Cummings of Ketchikan says on Facebook he's running in part to raise awareness of addiction and suicide. Carol Hafner lists a South Dakota address and says she's never been to Alaska. The primary is Tuesday, August 21st. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
As part of our coverage leading up to Tuesday's election, Alaska Public Media plans to air a story tomorrow about Democratic primary challenger Dmitry Shane. When it gets hot in Anchorage, some people cool off with a swim or a float down the city's creeks and streams. But is that safe? According to the state's Department of Environmental Conservation, most of Anchorage's waterways exceed the state standards for bacteria. As Alaska Public Media's Aaron McKinstry reports, everything from animal waste to homeless camps could be responsible.
Tom Ely wears a bright orange vest and camo pants. He stands on the shore of Campbell Creek near Bancroft Park. It's peaceful. The occasional airplane overhead is the only reminder that we're in the middle of Alaska's biggest city.
This actually is sort of our neighborhood beach, and people come here, the kids play here.
Some folks raft down the creek too, including Ely.
I got bounced off the end of the raft and went into the water and got a big mouthful of water, and I was like, oh my gosh, this may not be fun. But it caused no problems, but I mean, there's always the concern that it can.
Ely would know. He's in charge of research and education for the Anchorage Waterways Council. DEC data show that for almost all of the city's creeks and streams, levels of fecal coliform bacteria are higher than the safety standards for drinking, swimming, or even secondary activities like rafting and kayaking. The bacteria can lead to some unpleasant health problems, like urinary tract infections and diarrhea.
We have it in our gut tract. It's an indicator species that says that there is poop getting into this water of some sort or another.
The main problem with Anchorage's urban waterways is poop. To be fair, it could be worse. Most U.S. cities have to contend with big industries like agriculture or manufacturing that can leach chemicals or heavy metals into their streams. Anchorage's creeks flow straight from the Chugach Mountains. And fecal coliform doesn't cause problems for fish, just humans. Still, it's enough of an issue that it worries Ely.
I personally wouldn't swim here.
The municipality is required to conduct a certain number of tests a year, but their monitoring is limited to stormwater outfalls. The rest pretty much falls on Anchorage Waterways Council volunteers. Ely says they've struggled to find funding for basic materials.
We measure all sorts of weird things.
He kneels next to the creek and pulls a thermometer out of a green bag. He tests the temperature, the oxygen levels, and the pH. Finally, he fills a white bucket to check for fecal coliform.
And what we do is we take 5 milliliters of water and put it in here, mix it up, and then I take it back home and put it in a petri dish.
What's causing the high levels is a bit of a mystery. Testing is expensive and sometimes imprecise. It's identified horse poop in areas where there are no horses in Anchorage. Most arrows point to dogs and waterfowl like ducks and geese, but human waste may be playing a role too. In some streams, it could be leaky septic tanks on the hillside, and in others, homeless camps. Ely points across the stream to a well-worn pathway down to the water.
When you start having lots of homeless people living along creeks, you know, and they drink and they may want to bathe, and although I wouldn't drink this water, but people do, I've seen it, and so it can get into the water.
People have asked me about homeless camps and their contribution.
Jeannie Swartz works for DEC's Division of Water.
Like most people, I suspect the lack of sanitation facilities for the homeless population has contributed to the bacteria load problem, but I don't have any data to support that thought.
Swartz says high levels of bacteria popped up when Anchorage started monitoring its waterways in the 80s. Campaigns to get people to pick up after their dogs and stop feeding birds have been successful in specific areas. But DEC's data is only partial. It hasn't studied the issues comprehensively since 2000, when it identified dog poop as the main culprit.
We just have anecdotal evidence that they've gotten better, but that doesn't mean that much.
But that's about to change. She's just received a decade's worth of data from Ely and his team. By 2019, she hopes to have it analyzed for trends. They'll use that to pinpoint sources and hotspots. So, should you go for a swim or not? Swartz says yes, but taking a shower after swimming and avoiding putting your face in the water is advised. In Anchorage, I'm Erin McKinstry.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. You know your teenager is struggling, friends have changed, grades have dropped, and when you try to talk, they argue or ignore you. Don't wait until it gets worse. Take action by calling Alaska Crossings. Alaska Crossings has helped hundreds of teens gain back their confidence and self-esteem in a full, fun outdoor environment. The program is now accepting applications for troubled teens ages 12 to 18. Visit alaskacrossings.org and apply today. Alaska Crossings, youth succeed here. This message sponsored by Alaska Crossings.
School started in Bethel today, and some parents weren't entirely sure how their children were getting there. After parting ways with a longtime contractor, the Lower Kuskokwim School District doesn't have enough school buses for hundreds of the city's students. Administrators are scrambling to find transportation for them, and they've proposed that many children take taxis to school instead. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
Bethel's public schools don't have much of a bus system right now, but as of Monday night, they do have a deal with Cusco Cab. Naeem Shabani is the taxi company's CEO, and he says this could be difficult to pull off.
Let me put it to you this way. If anyone could, it's us.
Cusco Cab is the larger of Bethel's two cab operators, and Shabani says he's already talked through some of the logistics with school officials. The Lower Kuskokwim School District has offered to give children cab vouchers, and Cusco Cabs will pick the students up at designated stops throughout town.
We're trying to get as close to it being a bus service as possible. Think of it as like a shuttle service, you know, where folks that are going the same direction hang out, and the shuttle comes by and gets as many as they can.
LKSD finalized their deal with Shabani about 36 hours before the first day of school. This last-minute scramble is the result of a months-long contract negotiation process between the school district and Golden Eagle Unlimited, a Bethel-based company that's provided student transportation in town for more than 20 years. Golden Eagle and LKSD left the table without a deal, and they have somewhat different stories about what happened. In early 2018, the district issued a business proposal inviting companies to bid on a one-year contract to transport Bethel students to and from their schools. Former state legislator Bob Herron, who co-owns Golden Eagle, says the length of the contract was so short because the district actually wanted to get into the busing business themselves as a, quote, belt-tightening measure. LKSD's superintendent Dan Walker strongly disputes this. Now, LKSD is buying its own school buses. According to Walker, the new fleet will cost about $600,000, or about $100,000 per 65-passenger bus. But those buses won't arrive in town for another 6 weeks. Superintendent Walker defended his district's stopgap solution.
I know you haven't been out here very long, but it is absolutely routine for kids to take cabs. We do it at KLA all the time. We do it in our READY programs all the time.
Parents have expressed concerns about LKSD's use of taxis. Some are worried about younger students, first and second graders, riding to school alone in cabs. In general, cab drivers do not undergo the same background checks that school bus drivers do. Other community members, including Bethel Police Chief Burke Waldron, have expressed concerns about the traffic that all these Cusco cabs might cause in the mornings. While the first few days of school could be rocky, Superintendent Walker assured parents that LKSD's new bus system would be better in the long term.
This is going to work out, and it's going to be, I believe, a good system.
In the meantime, Cusco Cab's Naeem Shabani wrote a detailed Facebook post yesterday that listed when and where his taxi drivers will pick up Bethel students. LKSD notified parents of these changes yesterday, the day before school started. In Bethel, I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
The first day of school for a lot of the state is still right around the corner, and it can be a scary time for kids, especially if it's their first time leaving home. A new summer camp at Harborview Elementary School in Juneau is making that transition easier. KTOO's Jake Steinberg visited kindergarten boot camp.
Imagine you're 5 years old. You spent your whole life at home, but now it's time to start kindergarten. You've got to go to a place you've never been, filled with people you don't know, and do everything you're told. And not only do you have to learn all the new rules, like standing in line and raising your hand, but you also have to be prepared to learn. That's an abrupt change, and many kids aren't ready for it.
And we know that kids entering kindergarten in our school district, that we have kids that aren't prepared for learning. They aren't ready.
That's Molly Hillis. She coordinates Juneau School District's kindergarten readiness program. To ease the transition, she says the district tried something new this summer. They created a boot camp for kindergartners. The camp wrapped up on Thursday, and over the course of 3 weeks, 45 soon-to-be kindergartners got a chance to interact with their peers and practice being away from home. The camp cost $100 for 3 weeks, making it a less expensive option than other pre-K programs. Hillis says making pre-K more accessible is one of the district's goals.
We need to be able to help those families that don't necessarily have the same access as other families. So you can see that with different socioeconomic classes that some kids have more access than others.
Last year, the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development found only about a third of kindergarten students in Juneau showed up to the first day of school ready to learn. Director of Student Services Bridget Weiss says the camp is meant to change that. In addition to being introduced to routines they'll encounter in kindergarten, students also learn mindfulness techniques to help them stay focused. One of them is called the brain dance. It's a series of movements kids do after lunch to help them calm their bodies. And that's not all they learn.
We've been learning about the ocean.
What about the ocean?
So, jellyfish, they don't have any bones. They move by opening their heads, and then it pushes them.
That's 5-year-old Cooper Reed. His mother, Mallory, says Cooper's learned how fun school can be.
And he's choosing to go to school over playing with his friends in the summer. So I don't know what they're doing in there all day, but they're making it really fun.
The school district plans to offer the camp again next summer at Harborview and at a new location in the Mendenhall Valley. Funding for the camp comes from state grants and the City and Borough Assembly. Scholarships will be available for families who qualify. In Juneau, I'm Jake Steinberg.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Aaron McKinstry in Anchorage, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Mitch Borden in Katmai National Park, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Teresa Katsourilis in Bethel, and Jake Steinberg in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. Landing a job in Alaska's high-demand industries like welding, construction, medical billing, or marine transportation is now more affordable. The University of Alaska has reduced tuition for more than 300 career and technical education courses by 25%. From Ketchikan to Kotzebue, there has never been a better time to get started on your path to a new career. Learn more at www.alaska.edu/starthere. This message brought to you by the University of Alaska. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium featured open positions include CMAs and LPNs for their primary care clinics in Southeast Alaska. Come work for Search and contribute to your community. Enjoy full benefits, paid time off, and retirement savings. Search is looking for someone like you. For more information, visit search.org/jobs. That's search.org/jobs to apply. This message is sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.